Okay, 10:18 on Friday, January 25th, 2012. Good morning. I'm trying to hurry to get this in because I got to get in the car. I got to go to Colorado Springs. I'm moderating a panel in a couple of hours. I need to be there for it. It's like 5 o'clock, 4 o'clock. I'll be there. Let's see. The Springs is only about a 3-hour drive, and be an easy drive in the middle of the day. I hope. Famous last words, I'm sure. At any rate, most recently what I'm thinking about is a Google Plus conversation once more started with John Ward, who cross-posted a announcement that some author signed a print-only deal for her titles, Colleen something. So she's got a print-only deal with some company. And his question was, is this a sort of a trend? Is it the beginning of the end for publishing? Is it... There's 4 or 5 things that he asked. And I read that, and I looked at the announcement, and it was like, seriously? This is significant, how? So I spent quite a long time, way too long, much more time than I should have spent writing an answer, because several people said, oh yes, this is great, this is wonderful, this is going to be wonderful, this is going to be very cool. And my response was somewhat less, much less of a ringing endorsement, let's put it that way. The thing is that a print-only deal with one of the bigs means that they will print your book and put it in bookstores. No, that's not what it means. It means they will take your book and put it into print and make it available in their catalog for bookstores to buy. It doesn't mean the bookstores are going to buy it. It doesn't mean that even if the bookstores do buy it, customers will buy it. Because unless you're a big seller, you're not going to make it into Walmart. So you're talking Barnes & Noble. You're talking primary bookstore markets, not secondary markets like Barnes & Noble or probably even Hudson Airport kiosks. You're talking about back shelf Barnes & Noble. So what's the probability that that's going to result in any kind of major sale? And the odds, the probability, is really quite low. It just struck me that here are all these people who are piling on saying, oh yes, this is wonderful, this is going to be great, this is going to revitalize the publishing. Not so much. You're rebraiding the buggy whip. Because the reality is, bookstore shelf space, on the grand scheme of things, if you look at the overall picture, the bookstore shelves are going to continue to be the bookstore shelves. Simple Pareto analysis says 20% of the titles are going to account for 80% of the sales. It's just the way it's going to be. And I suspect that it's even worse, because I think 5% of the titles are going to account for 85% of the sales. And 1% of the titles, 1% is going to account for something like 90% of the sales dollars. So in a bookstore with 100,000 titles, how many is 1%? It's 1,000 titles. It's 1,000 books. Wow, big number. Wrong. Wrong. In a sea of 100,000, 1,000 isn't really big. It's 1%. It's one penny out of a whole dollar. What can you do for a dollar? What can you do for a penny? So there's an issue here. There's a problem. There's a disconnect. There's the sort of the idea that once you get your books at a bookstore, let me back up. Once you get your books with a mainstream publisher, you caught the brass ring because your books will go into a bookstore. Ah. Okay, the historical record doesn't really show that's the case. The historical record doesn't really show that getting a book picked up by a publisher results in fame and fortune. It doesn't even show that it results in sales. Historically, and since historically means in the bookstores, publishers have sold for mid-list genre authors about 5,000 units in the title's lifetime. There's no reason to suspect that they're going to do any differently now that they have to compete with ebooks. The business drivers, the business models just don't support it. Now, maybe they will match it, but I really have a hard time expecting that they're going to exceed it. They don't know how to sell ebooks, so they are propping up the prices of their paperback books by keeping their ebook prices artificially high, generally speaking, across the board. So what's the impetus for me to try to get my books in a bookstore? I don't see it. I'm not buying it. Hi. There's no upside there. There is a considerable downside. The downside is that they tie up my book, and they tie up my book for years before I can get it back and sell it myself again. The paper rights, of course. I'm not talking about the ebook rights because this is an ebook deal only. But they're going to want audio, because I'm pretty sure the paper only isn't really paper only. I'd have to see the contract. But reserving your ebook rights out of the grand smorgasbord isn't the be-all and end-all of the rights grabs that the publishers are going for. But even assuming that that's all they got is the right to print and publish, distribute the paper. Really? 5,000 units? That's all? Now, some people, Michael Sullivan has done very good. He's done very well, I suppose is the right way to say that grammatically. He got a six-figure advance, and I don't know if it was had a one in the front or an eight in the front or something, but it was a six-figure advance. It was a good advance. He was happy with it. He expected to lose $1 million a year on the deal, and he's actually turning a little bit of a profit, so he's ahead in his estimation and very pleased with the outcome, pleased enough that he's actually signed more books to go with Orbit, so, oh, okay, that's fine. I don't buy Michael's books anymore, and not just because of Ryden. It's just because I don't pay that price for books anymore. I pay ebook prices for books, and I don't pay mainstream press publishers' prices for ebooks. I stopped buying those when Ellie Modisett's latest book cost me $15 in ebook form. It's like, never again. Now, once in a while, I will buy one, and it's marked down to $7.99, but $15? I don't think so. That ain't happening. So the argument of discovery is really quite specious as well. Well, if it's in a bookstore, people will see it. They'll find out my name, and then maybe they'll buy my book. Well, the problem is that the bookstore traffic is real small compared to the online traffic, which is huge. I mean, how many people go into bookstores anymore? Maybe if you add them all up, 5,000 an hour across all the bookstores across North America, maybe 5,000 people an hour go into those bookstores. I don't know. I've got no number, so I'm just spitballing. Maybe it's 100,000. I don't know. But I do know that science fiction and fantasy accounts for only about 28%. So of however many are there, only a quarter of them are going to go to the shelves that might potentially have my book. And when they get there, they have to find my book among all the others. And for places that specialize in science fiction, it could be an extensive collection, which would be good because they're most likely to stock my book. In places that don't have extensive science fiction and fantasy sections, my book isn't going to be there at all. So that store doesn't count. Monkpole. So this whole idea of getting a book in the bookstore as a pathway to fame and fortune, it just, yeah, it has that get-rich-quick, slimy feel to it, to me. And I really can't justify in my own mind taking the risk. Yeah, some people, some very, very few, slim number of people who manage to get through the editing process, get through the marketing, sales, get your book into a bookstore, and then get your book into the hands of a reader. That is a wickedly, wickedly difficult task. And for what? 11% of the cover price? When you're doing all the marketing to begin with? And the only way they're going to find out your name is if you tell them or somebody that they trust tells them? It's just, I'm all for making a pass at the brass ring. But as I said in my post, this carousel doesn't even have enough horses for the people who are on it. And the brass ring isn't even good for a free ride. So who cares? So that's my rant for the day. Setting me up in good fashion for the conference. I think the panel I'm moderating this afternoon is Kindle and Kobo and Nook, Oh My, A Reader's Perspective. It should be fun because I am a reader, and I really believe in these e-readers as a godsend for readers everywhere. With Kobo in the international market, with Kindle dominating the U.S., Nook is an also-ran. Nook really needs to clean up its act if it really wants to compete with the big boys. But right now, their discovery process, their listing process, their ability to put interesting books in the hands of potential readers. When the readers go to the website, forget about going on the Nook, but even if you go to the website, finding an interesting book is a challenge. So, this is great stuff. There's some interesting questions. I'm trying to think of what some interesting questions to ask the panelists might be. It's like, do you read on an e-reader? Do you use e-reader software? I read on my phone. But I have a, most people freak out when they see my phone. It really, this Samsung Galaxy Note is really as close to a ship's tablet as I've seen in real life, real form so far. It's just, every time I open it up and I've got the Lois McKendrick logo on the back as a background, as the wallpaper. It just tickles me no end. I'm easily amused, I suppose, but I open it up and I think, oh wow, okay, Lois McKendrick. So that should be fun. One of the panels, I think the last panel I'm on Sunday afternoon, has to do with gender equality in fantasy and science fiction. It should be a real interesting panel. Connie Willis, I think it's Connie and S.M. Sterling. I need to look up Sterling before I leave so I know who I'm looking for. Also need to get my copy of Peshawar Lancers. Get him to sign it. I mean, I like his Corvallis series. I like his the other series, the East Coast series that he has. But I think what really, of all of the books that I've got, and he does a lot of really cool time stuff, but the Peshawar Lancers, the steampunk book, really, for me, marks the point where Sterling stepped, not Bruce Sterling, but S.M. Sterling, stepped into my awareness in a most significant way. I can't remember now if I'm moderating two or three panels. I'm doing a lot of moderation this year, I know. That's all right, I saw Mehmet at Mile High Con and I said, look, whatever you need, put me on it, I'll be there. I did get my room, I don't know if I mentioned it yesterday. I got my room, I got the last room on the block. God, can't believe I waited so long. Yesterday was another interesting day, because I went out early. I went out like 7 o'clock and got back early and got it posted early, and I clicked the button and it must have been somewhere in the vicinity of the publish button but not on it, because it wasn't published. And thank you, John Hibden, for calling me to task, and Tara for actually emailing me to tell me that it wasn't published. I was like, what? Excuse me? And I went and looked, and sure, it's no, not published. It wasn't there. It was sitting there waiting for me to hit the publish button. The checks were all in place. My mouse was even hovering over, or actually near, the publish button. So it was still in the position it had been in, or nearly. So the whole thing was very confusing to me. I've had a couple of those instances lately. One, it was not my fault. I made coffee. And so I ground the coffee beans, and I put the filter and put in the coffee, and then punched the brew button, walked away. And I got halfway down the stairs and realized, this will work much better if you actually put water in the pot. Well, my pot is one of those that if you punch the button, it starts to try to work and actually has a little bit of water, usually, left in the reservoir. And so it hissed and bubbled and spurted and got the top of the grounds wet. But I went in and I got the water and poured it in and punched the button and walked away. And my wife went up a half hour later and I heard the coffee grinder going. I thought, what the hell? So I went up to find out and she said, you didn't make coffee. I thought you made coffee. And I said, I thought I made coffee. And she says, no, it's just wet grounds in there. That's all, nothing. No water, no coffee, no nothing. And I opened the back and I stuck my finger in. The water was there. The problem is that there's a cool down. And when I put the water into the back of the pot, the cool down hadn't finished. So when I pressed the brew button, it went, no. It sat there. And when my wife opened the thing to look in, she saw the wet grounds on the top and thought the whole thing was soggy. And so she threw the grounds out, fresh and all, and started to make new. And it's like, but for 2 hours, I was convinced that I was sure I made coffee, but obviously I hadn't, because there wasn't coffee in the brew basket, even though there was water in the back of the pot. It took us a couple of hours to figure out what had happened. So, yeah, sucks get old. And on that note, I'm at the back gate. Tomorrow is another day, but I doubt very much that I will talk to you again before Monday. So, until then, we'll see you later.